Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 668, May 2023.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I am your level 20 host, Jason Snell, and we are here to discuss a film based on a role-playing game. It is Dungeons & Dragons. Not the one that we watched for a rocket surgery a while ago, but colon Honor Among Thieves, a 2023 fantasy film. Much better, spoilers for this, much better than the previous Dungeons & Dragons film. I am joined by our three players. Let me introduce them to you now. A level 18 Dungeon Master, Tony Sindelar.
Hello, multi-class, level 18 Dungeon Master, level 1 Tony. Hello, nerds, reporting for whatever.
A level 18 Dungeon Master, because I'm not going to try to insult either of them. Scott McNulty, hello.
Hello, I'm proud to share the same level as Tony.
Scott's been Dungeon Mastering a lot longer than me.
And he's a level 5 rogue, but multi-classing as a level 4 soccer man. It's Moises Trion.
I come from the Soccerman tribes of the mountains, and I will exact revenge.
With his ball! I'm trying to imagine.
I can't touch it with my hands for some reason.
my whirling sphere of destruction.
Jason. Not a ball. An orb.
An orb.
We're talking
D&D.
Right. An orb.
It's the sacred Soccerman orb. It is a magic item. You have to attune to it.
Yes. If not an orb, it has to be like a sphere-shaped source.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a 5-foot sphere in front of you. So Dungeons & Dragons, directed by that kid who played Dungeons & Dragons in Freaks and Geeks. That's John Francis Daly, along with Jonathan Goldstein. And this is a movie that...
Who made Game Night?
Who made Game Night?
If you saw Game Night and you liked Game Night, the Game Night guys did the Dungeons & Dragons movie.
They did.
Woohoo.
They did.
I've been playing D&D for as long as John Francis Daly has been alive.
Oh, how many movies have you made, Scott?
I've made zero.
Well,
he's 37,
you know.
So he wins on that.
Yeah, well,
so
stick with it.
Let's start with the most important part of our discussion of this film, which is I assume that there are... Okay, how should I phrase this? I watched this with Lauren. She said... Be sure to tell the guys on the podcast that I didn't understand any of the references, but I still enjoyed it. Okay. Done.
That's pretty good.
And I'll say, I understood some of the references, but then before we got started, Tony was like, oh, I play with people, I have to do things with the Harpers. And I'm like, oh, the Harpers, a thing I had never heard of. So tell me, everybody, like, I feel like you can enjoy this movie without knowing the references, but unlike that old D&D movie where they had a beholder so they could say, hey, it's a beholder, a legendary D&D character, or sorry, race, monster, whatever you want to call them.
Monster.
They're in the manual.
They're monsters.
It's nice of D&D to give you a manual for monsters. Anyway, it didn't feel...
It's just a mirror.
To me, it didn't feel so... overly laden in references that it slowed things down, but I would every now and then be like, I would actually whisper to Lauren, I'm like, that's a spell.
You were that guy.
I was doing a little like, that's a reference kind of, I got the reference,
if I could lead into the more experienced people, cause I have performed as an NPC on Total Party Kill. I have played our Random Track TPK role-playing modules. I have never played Dungeons & Dragons as a player.
All right. Okay, good. So you're our sort of test case here.
My experience in the tropes and worlds of Dungeons and Dragons, there were references I got. I knew what a beholder was. I knew what various terms meant, that sort of thing, but I never felt lost. Then again, I have gone, you know, full bore into things that are directly derived on the D&D template and world, things like the Final Fantasy games, Dragon's Quest, a lot of video games that borrow generously, not just in the leveling and statistics and that sort of thing, but in a lot of the vibes, mm-hmm. as it were. And as an improv performer, you know, I made up like a tabletop role-playing fantasy thing because growing up in North Texas, D&D, it was stigmatized.
Basically some kids' illegal. Parents,
yeah, some kids' parents just wouldn't let them play. But if it's just a thing that I made up that I shamelessly ripped off of what I could glean from the way that Final Fantasy did stuff like stats and abilities and classes and that sort of thing, then it kind of worked. So I didn't even play store brand D&D. I made my own brand, sort of D&D thing that I played with some friends over a couple of summers. And was always jealous of friends who could freely play Dungeons and Dragons. And it's one of the reasons that I love listening to TPK, because I didn't get to have that experience that a lot of people did growing up. So all that said, opening speech before the battle done, I loved how completely not lost I felt in this movie that I would not say it is great cinema. It's not Citizen Kane, whatever. But it is a great experience because it is just an incredibly fun adventure movie that you didn't have to do homework before seeing to understand anything that happens.
Yeah. So I will say this is this movie that has the words D&D on the name of the movie is an extremely D&D trademark brand movie, more so than any of the previous D&D movies that feel a little bit more like they had a fantasy movie and then did a little bit of work to staple on like some very minor things that are like from D&D in order to like cash in on a branding. This has a lot of references in it. It has the references where every time we need to insert like a proper noun for something, we're going to use an existing thing from the D&D world. Even if it's like, this is that thing that's far away, right? Like the rich people who are going to lend the bad guy money are from Baldur's Gate and Waterdeep, which are cities in the D&D world.
Right. I got those references.
There's stuff where we're going to actually show you things. Right, like so we're in the city of Neverwinter and we're going to show you this monster and we tell you the name of it, right? Like, you know, the druid turns into an owlbear and Chris Pine asks the sorcerer like what's the deal with that, and he's like, it's an owlbear. In case you haven't played D&D and don't know what an owlbear is, you know, a lot of it's covered in the name. It's half owl, half bear, you know, that gets you a long
and,
way,
you know. you look at it and you go, that looks like a bear but also an owl.
Now, yep,
sure. And if you're me, you say druids cannot wild shape into owlbears.
they did update it, Scott, so you can, because nerds were furious about that when the trailer came out. And then there's the subtle references where, you know, they're in the Colosseum and there are various monsters that are attacking them, and they're all iconic D&D monsters. But they don't give them names. You know, there's the horrible treasure chest that opens up with its sticky tongue, and that's a mimic.
Yes.
And you don't need to know that it's a mimic to be like, that's scary and I don't like that.
That was one of my elbowing Lauren moments. Yeah. Like, it's a mimic. Dan does a funny voice and does about a mimic. Yeah.
There's the panther with weird tendrils that's a displacer beast that honestly, actually, I think they made cooler than how the displacer beast actually is in D&D, or at least because the displacer beast is basically just hard to hit. And the idea is it's hard to hit because it's like in two places at once. Right. And only one of them is real. So, you know, they've got all that stuff in there, and the Red Wizards of Fae and all of that is from D&D lore. So it's clearly like they started with a story that was D&D and filled it with D&D things. So that, you know, you'd have to be a very persnickety D&D nerd to be mad about anything in here.
Scott?
But then there's a question of like, well,
I am that D&D nerd.
Yeah.
And I'm mostly angry at a meta level as well, because then all the things, so the power of the brand coupling of this movie and, you know, Hasbro owning D&D and this movie is that they can change these things based on the movie, right? So
yes.
They are not technically incorrect because they just make them right because they own both things. So
there is some stuff in here where, you know, I saw lots of comparisons of this to an MCU movie in terms of, you know, it's a big romp and there's lots of CGI and there's quips and it's you know, it's fine slash good slash, you know, this is not like this is not a movie you're gonna watch 30 times with your children. There is the thing also where it's like, yeah, if we change something about this now, we'll change it in the comics because the movie is the most important right. reality because mm-hmm. it is the most marketable. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's right.
But yeah, you know, it is full of stuff. And at times I was like, oh, yeah, what a great choice to make him the Harpers. I wonder if they'll tell you everything you need to know about the Harpers in this movie. They do. That's all you need to know. You know, so there is stuff which made it feel like they love, you know, presumably someone involved in the writing of this movie loves D&D or cares a lot about D&D and also knows that D&D is a little silly. I mean, I think to me, the perfect stuff is the amount of plans that they have that do not go well and they have to recover and get through it and figure something else out is a very D&D experience. And it's goofy, yeah. But it's not that they think Dungeons and Dragons is goofy or stupid, but that goofier and stupid things happen mm-hmm. when one is playing Dungeons and Dragons.
I don't know if you can make a movie like this without having it be fun, right? Like that would be the most colossal mistake of all would be mm-hmm. like, no. This is Dungeons and Dragons. It's very serious. And instead, this movie is very much not. I mean, there are stakes and there, you know, and people are trying to save people or resurrect people and like risk their yep. lives. And all of these things are going on. But it's all because like D&D is a game and you're supposed to have fun. It's all fun.
It's yeah. very serious about having a good time.
Yeah.
There you go.
Chris Pine is doing some very important work in here as the goofy guy who is not surrounded by goofy guys, right? Mm-hmm. But is you know, perhaps Chris Pine at his most Chris Pine charismatic.
Yes.
You know, I don't like to think about what this movie looks like if you had not Chris Pine in that role, because he's surrounded by so many kind of, you know, comically ponderous people or you know, there's the gruff barbarian and the paladin who takes everything literally and the, you know, kind of sad sack sorcerer. The druid, I feel like, kind of is a little underwritten. But yeah, his charm is pretty critical to enjoying this movie.
And the druid. She is the one among the cast who really actively played D&D growing up. And I went to the world premiere at South by Southwest and it was great seeing how enthusiastic the audience was. And I hope people got to see this theatrically because it's a great theatrical experience movie because everybody is along for the adventure and getting that kind of audience response is so incredibly crucial. But the most hilarious pointed thing that got said in the entire Q&A, as part of a question that I asked about what class each of them would play if they were playing now, some of them played for the first time as a cast. And when it got to her, she said, well, I mean, I feel like I've got to play a cleric because for some reason we don't have a cleric in this
they
movie.
They don't have a Kenny healers. Nope.
Yeah. Health is a team resource unless you're in a yep. movie, in which case, whatever.
You know, you die yeah. or you don't.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
I'm glad, Tony, that you brought up Chris Pine because, you know, mm-hmm. there are many Chris's out there.
Too many, in my opinion.
But Pine's my guy. I'm mm-hmm. just saying, one of the reasons that I like Pine, not just because he's Captain Kirk, although that goes a long way, but Pine, he's so charismatic and yet he brings a lightness. He is, like when I saw this trailer, the trailer for this movie, and I was like, oh, D&D movie starring Chris Pine. Chris Pine is going to be the hero. Yeah, Chris Pine. And then I get to the end of the trailer and I'm like, he's a bard. he's a bard. And yet it's so perfect, right? Because he is the hero, but he's also the planner, and his plans go wrong, and he's not super powerful, but he's very charming, and he's got such a light touch. Like I enjoy seeing him on screen. And I think he brings that, the ability to have that kind of like lightness and lightweight, where I enjoy the movie, and I know that there are stakes, and he has stakes. His character has stakes in the movie, but it also never gets dour when Chris Pine is around. He is just, he's my choice. He's my favorite Chris. Mm-hmm. There, I said it.
No, he's fun. You know, throughout the whole movie, like, he just bops a couple people with his loot. That's about it, right? And it's amusing because he's surrounded by, we have Michelle Rodriguez as Holga, the relatively powerhouse barbarian who can take out like 10 people as needed. There's Simon, the sorcerer, who's, he's got some confidence issues, but clearly capable of great things. And then they recruit kind of the MVP druid who can turn into all kinds of different animals, including in a long continuous CGI sequence where she's like six different animals being chased through a city. It's interesting that he is not, he's not a big sword swinging action hero. He's just a guy with a lute.
but he's the idea man. That's what I enjoy about man. It is that is that that is a tough role, right? Because the idea man, it's very important, but also shoulders all the blame when the plan goes wrong. And it's a movie, of course the plan is going to go wrong.
The plan goes wrong a lot.
It's literally in the movie, right? They're like, then you get another plan. Like, this is how it works. You just keep on coming up with new plans. Plans until they kill you, right? That's what we do.
I even kind of like the general premise of the movie. So they've got it, the title Honor Among Thieves, or subtitle there, lets you know that this is about kind of scoundrelly D&D characters who are perhaps in it to get rich, not necessarily in it to save the day. And though, spoilers for the movie, I don't know if we're past the spoiler horn or not, they have to save the day. But like, literally the threat to the world that or city that they then have to save like appears about 20 minutes before the end of the movie, right? And it's like, oh, we have to do this also. And I was like, I guess you do. But it is not it is technically in there in a way that's almost a little amusingly stapled on at the end, because it is not a movie about defeating forces of darkness and winning things over until the very end, where it's like, yeah, I guess we should turn the boat around.
Right. Because they got to collect some stuff, right? They got to collect some stuff because they're trying to do this thing. And then there are things that get in the way. He's trying to resurrect his wife, who was killed because of something he blames himself for. And so they have a series of quests they have to go on, including some pretty hairy ones where they have to go into
the underdark.
Ah, yes, mm-hmm. The underdark.
You're lucky I've never sent you to dungeon. The underdark, Jason.
A dungeon. Well, I did.
Well,
I had
it's a land. There are dungeons in it.
Is the underdark not a dungeon? Okay,
it is not a dungeon, sir. People live there.
I brought in a checklist for this movie, which was Dungeon and Dragon, and I left checked.
Jason, I'll have you know, I lived in the underdark for a solid two semesters in college. There,
it's great. Okay. Also drow, spiders.
Most famously, a lot of spiders.
Illithid.
Okay. That's where Stranger Things happens, right? Stranger Things is in the underdark, well, is that right?
Let's not do that. The movie starts, Jason, with people imprisoned in what you might think of as a prison, but I will think of as a dungeon.
Could be. In a comedy scene, imprisonment scene, where it's, can we talk our way out of this? I got a plan. I'm going to order some DoorDash for the judges, and it's a plan. It's one of those Chris Pine wacky plans that he's got. Mm-hmm. That was also a good bit where it's like, oh, they were gonna let them out, but then they escaped. Yeah. It didn't really matter. Yeah, it is. You got the dungeons, you got the dragons. But you're right, there is that moment at the end where it's like, oh, actually, there is a colossal evil thing that's about to happen. I guess we gotta fight that. Okay. But it's only in the last 20 minutes. Up to that point, it is literally we have some quests that we have to do in order to get to the point where we want to resurrect Chris Pine's dead wife. And then, and Hugh Grant stands in the way, as you do. I enjoyed Hugh Grant. I thought Hugh Grant, he knows what he's good at, I think.
Yeah.
Hugh Grant does, and it's this it's this charismatic and charming, smarmy bad guy, rogue type guy. Like, this is, I mean, did they write the real philosophical question is, did they write this part for Hugh Grant, or did they write this part and go, oh, Hugh Grant? It was got, it had to be one of those, because this is a very, very Hugh Granty kind of part. I enjoy
it. And Jeremy
that.
Irons was already in one D&D movie.
That's
we're not
right.
going to trick him into coming back for this one. Yeah.
he is.
We burned that bridge, but good.
And it strikes me that Hugh Grant is having a lot of fun chewing the scenery in this movie, slightly less than Jeremy Irons was chewing the movie, the scenery in the previous D&D movie.
And I don't know if we're blowing a spoiler horn or if we're just kind of considering everything.
I think we're just rolling with it. Yeah.
Supporting part that, I mean, got more prominence in the trailer than he does in the movie, Reggae Jean Page, is fantastic.
Oh, let me tell you. So I was gonna get to him. So he's the paladin, and he appears, is insufferably a paladin, and then at some point he's like, I'm gonna let you guys take it the rest of the way, and he gets out.
A great exit.
It's
yeah.
so good. It's because I felt the D&D there. It's like he's parachuting in, and paladins, as somebody who played a paladin, it's like the paladins are like, he's really good, I hate him, right? It's like, oh, it's so good. Perfect.
Also, I mean, Jason, it's literally like we had someone available for like two sessions in the middle of the adventure, and then he couldn't eat, and then his scheduling was
He's like, I got a thing on Tuesday.
Tuesdays are
taking
really
a night
hard,
class,
guys. Yeah,
it's so, like, but no, you're so cool. Please come to our group. He's like, nope, I got other things to do.
We did the thing. We got the helmet. I'm just gonna say my guy walked away on the beach. Okay?
Yeah.
The beautiful thing that happened again at the premiere during the Q&A. Usually in those, it's just, it's utterly dreadful when somebody gets up to the microphone and goes, oh, hey, can I have a selfie? Hey, can you shout out my grandpa? Hey, you know, would you give me a hug? Except in this case, it totally worked. An older black woman gets up to the microphone and she says, Reggae Jean Page, I just want to say you are amazing and I love you. And I'm so sorry to do this, but could I please get a hug? And Reggae Jean Page, almost as if in character, strides across the stage, leaps off, takes her in his arms, and the whole place utterly melts down. And it's that kind of energy that he brings to the part that makes people go, I wish I had a whole movie of him. But frankly, the tactical portion of him that we got was exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, no, you don't. That was perfect. It was perfect.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I think that character brings that's so funny is he's not there at the beginning. He's really reluctant. You know, everybody hates him. And but he's such a hero. And then he strides away. I mean,
great exit. Great introduction, too. He pulls the baby cat out of the baby tabaxi right out of a giant fish. People are like, yeah,
no, he's in a much more heroic. This is the impression, right? Is he's in a much more heroic movie that our dumb main characters are not in.
Yes, he's several levels above them.
Oh, yes, he is.
I'll help
you
out.
So he's not going to stick around with them. He's like, you're not doing anything for me. I'll help you. I'll get you the helmet that I hid, and then you can go do whatever you need to do. I don't care.
He also has an extremely aggressive D&D name that starts with an X, and then his last name starts with a Y. That's, you know, that's very, very D&D.
Absolutely.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara especially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
I thought Michelle Rodriguez did great. Like, I haven't seen her in anything in a while because I don't watch Fast and Furious movies.
I was gonna
she's
say,
in the Fast and Furious movies, right?
She's in a lot of them. But okay. Spoilers, she dies, and then she has amnesia, and then she's back.
Oh, good.
It turns out she didn't die. Spoiler for amnesia. 12 years ago or something.
Death, the ultimate amnesia.
One of the Fast and Furious movies, but I won't tell you which one. I think she's fine. I mean, it's not the hugest range for this character. There's a little bit. I mean, I like that she's the surrogate mother. There's a, you know, D&D character. She's got a backstory, right?
Yes.
She's been kicked out of her tribe. That would actually probably be one of my few complaints with the movie is I did not like the special effects of her ex-husband, I guess. I wasn't sure of the legal status of the relationship. But yeah. So,
but what yeah. an a strange cameo, yes,
yeah.
of Bradley Cooper playing a halfling,
and it's kind of like, did we need this? Was it as funny in execution as you thought it was going to be?
But yeah, we got Bradley Cooper though, and we can't really cut it out because we got him.
I think what's hard is they went with in this because he's a halfling, right?
Right,
and halflings are. You know, I mean, just checking. None of you is a Hasbro lawyer on this podcast, right?
Yep,
we're all good.
Nope.
Halflings are hobbits, people.
Yeah.
Right? They're 100% hobbits. And in all of the D&D materials, they're hobbits. And they instead for this, and I guess because they don't want to look like Lord of the Rings, instead of them being, you know, short, round little people, he's just like a scaled down guy.
Yeah.
And that's weird.
Tony, wouldn't you say that they're more 50%?
Well,
because it's halflings.
Math. People love that. People tune in for the math.
That's right. It says expressed as a percentage. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
My favorite part of this movie, I think, might be the Underdark. Because I enjoy the teleportation nonsense. That happens. I think
rope is briefly discussed before teleporting. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do. The climax. The idea. Okay. There's an ongoing MacGuffin that involves ultimately that involves a portable hole that is used in a chest so that they can do, you know, get people into the right places and then they have to like push up because it's on the ground.
And then it ends up not mattering.
And it totally doesn't. But that business, along with some of the Underdark kind of business that goes on, I really enjoyed the mechanics of it. And Tony, to your point, like, I don't know, it feels very D&D. Like, it's just a fun fantasy thing that they have to do with some mechanics that are interesting in order
There's
to get them to the next scene.
You get a dragon. A dragon that is both, I would say, almost like a metaphor for this movie, threads that it is a dragon. It is a big fire-breathing fantasy dragon that is a menace, but is also pretty comical because it's like a big round cartoon dragon that rolls over stuff and is you know,
it's a well-fed dragon.
Yeah, not your traditional dragon proportions.
No, he's a big boy.
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of two minds about it where I was like, are we doing the cheap fat joke? Is that what's happening? But it was also just kind of practically speaking, making the size of the dragon, making it difficult for the dragon to attack things and finding a way to defeat it. So it didn't bug me as much as I think it might have, but it still bugged me a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's a way of defanging the dragon too a little bit where it's like, oh no, we have to fight the dragon.
It's like, guys, this is halfway through the movie. This can't be our big bad thing right here, right? Like, we gotta save stuff for the end.
And yeah, the dragon can't be scarier than the red wizard of Fae trying to convert everyone into zombies.
Yeah, yeah. Right,
exactly.
One of my favorite scenes is the, which I think also feels very D&D, is when they are trying to track down the MacGuffin and they finally reach some graveyard that they've been trying to get to for quite a while, and they dig up multiple corpses to do the same thing over and over again where they ask them five questions, and they're real bad at it at first, to comic delight. That felt aggressively like, and things that have happened around the table.
And the
D&D.
One guy who they only asked four questions of, and he's like, hello, please help. And they bring him back in the credits.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's a good bit. It's a funny bit. So I guess, I mean, you could say this is a series of set pieces and a series of comedy bits, and it's all kind of woven together. But I think it feels like a movie. It's not gonna blow anybody away, but I was thoroughly entertained, and I went in being like, I don't know, it's a D&D movie, is it gonna be any good? Our friend Todd Vaziri worked on it. He's one of only two people who worked on both this and that other D&D movie.
All the other ones have walked into the ocean.
And he did. I will yeah. admit that that I got a text from Todd like 6 months ago where he was like, I can't say anything about this movie other than to say, I think it's better than the other D&D movie. It's like, yes, it is.
Yes, I concur.
And you know what? Sometimes I walk out of movies and I think that hit the spot, right? Like, is it going to change my life? Is it like, oh, you got to see it, it's amazing? Kind of. No, but no. I was thoroughly entertained. And for a movie that's runs over 2 hours, as movies do these days, I wasn't bored. I was thoroughly entertained. I really enjoyed it. It took me on a ride. I laughed at some of the references, but I also liked how knowing and winking it was about the fact that this is an adventure and the purpose of it is to have fun and go on an adventure. And, you know, it just that there was something about it. I think that they, obviously, the directors get it. Right. Like in the end, this did not feel like a previous D&D movie or a Super Mario Brothers kind of movie where it's sort of like, yes, I know what the kids like about video games and or role playing games. No, this is like I could see that this is a labor of love by people who totally get it, being paid by Hasbro to put it on screen. But still, who get it?
And they should be applauded for resisting the temptation to make it into this ponderous epic that takes itself yes. way too seriously, because that's the other way you can go with this source material, right? It's like everything is super important and it's, you know, you're fighting gods or trying right. to save the world, or, you know, your heroes are, you know, gods amongst men, and it's super important. And while that's a valid, certainly you can tell interesting stories that way, I think that this material is better served with this kind of, because it really felt to me like I was watching somebody's, like they just had a D&D campaign that they based this movie on, mm-hmm. And fictionalized it. And so it felt very, as a D&D player, it felt very familiar and entertaining.
Yeah.
Speaking of Mr. Todd Vaziri and the effects.
Yes.
My favorite effect in the entire movie is the mutating, morphing illusion of Chris Pine.
Breaking down.
Breaking down. it gave me so much joy.
That was one of the few I felt like that wasn't seeded into the trailer. You know, the trailer unfortunately gives you like everything that's going to be in the movie except that one, which is delightful. So because it, you know, the trailer includes that the part where they're like the rug turns into quicksand and they're popping through holes sure. and all that things. But yes, the Chris Pine illusion going broken robot because the sorcerer is like stuck, his foot is stuck on a rock, is was delightful and terrifying. I'm just curious, you know, how do people feel about kind of the overarching story? I think I was a little apprehensive that it felt like kind of your classic comic book fridging of the wife later. It kind of goes in a different direction, I think, a little bit, but that's a rough place to start any kind of action adventure movie from, in terms of feeling both kind of like a overused trope. So, you know, I didn't love that as a starting place. I think it came around for me a little bit when they don't bring the wife back and that he, you know, he realizes other stuff. But it did kind of feel like, you know, a woman has been murdered for the purposes of plot. The plot will now commence.
I felt not great about it at first, but like as when I saw where the movie was going and once it got there, it worked better for me in that, you know, granted, there's some of that like, you know, Disney princess, dead mom, mm-hmm. syndrome to it. But the beautiful thing to me about what leads to the decision to bring Holga back is it makes this big adventure movie, not about striving for immortality, but accepting and processing grief mm-hmm. where the act of the wife dying is a thing that happened in the past and is part of the setup of this is where we begin the story. We begin the story in the aftermath of all that. Mm-hmm. And it ended up working really well for me as a result.
I think that the start of the movie is a little, I think, tonally awkward, where, you know, you have the like horrible. I think he's an orc. They don't label him, but who comes in like, and it's like when they're unloading the Velociraptor at the start of the Jurassic Park, right? They've got the cage right. That like hooks into the jail, and then they're bringing him, and he's like, you know, he's harassing the Michelle Rodriguez character. Like, I think the combination of that and then like the wife has been tragically murdered. Like, I am glad that that is not a tone that persists throughout the rest of the movie. It's a little rough as a 1-2 punch at the beginning, because it's not what the tone of the rest of the movie is going to be.
Right. It's the that's me. I guess you're wondering how I got to this point kind of thing. Right. Where it's the prison pardon heist thing is zany comedy bits. And then there's also the dead wife, and we've got the setup with the failed or like partially failed attempt by the previous party to steal the right thing. So like I think I had that moment too where I'm like, wait a second, what movie is this? When we get to the prison, in fact, I mean, I enjoyed the prison scene, but it was jarring that was happening after that first scene. I agree.
The other thing I was kind of, I don't know if anyone else has thoughts on, again, I like a lot about the movie and how it looks. I love that we've got some appearances by D&D character types that are expensive to do, right? In terms of, so you've got the Birdman judge that they use to escape out from jail. That's an Arakocra. And one of the other people on the panel is a Dragonforge. I'm sorry. One of the other people on the panel is a dragonborn, which is a dragon person.
Right.
We've got a cat person, which is a tabaxi. I think I was a little expecting there to be more. I mean, there's basically a reference to the fact that Simon is a half elf and we've got the tiefling with horns, but very human centric party. And it felt a little bit odd to not have kind of more dwarves and elves as your kind of classic fantasy D&D characters. There's like that one dwarf who's very dwarfy in the arena at the end before he gets murdered. And I don't know. I was a little surprised that they didn't choose to have someone like that in the party. I wondered perhaps why they might have chosen to do that.
Something that I headcanon about that was that kind of along the lines of the 2009 Star Trek, where they were going, let's do a take on Star Trek that doesn't feel like it was only made for the people that are completely obsessed with this already. And I think that there is something to going, hold on, we'll get to all the weird stuff. We're going to make sure that most of your most prominent characters are extremely humanoid or, you know, humanoid with a tail. And we're just not going to show you much of the tail in the trailers. Just that person turning into an owlbear. So I think that might be a piece of it. And I think another piece of it might be just letting the world breathe and leaving the door open to, you know, we learned about tieflings. And maybe in the next movie we go, you know, deeper on elven and dwarven stuff. And then on the third hand of out of two, you know, maybe there's the notion of, well, Rings of Power.
Yeah. Right? I wondered about that. Cause you would not mistake this for Rings of Power really at any moment.
Yeah.
Rings of Power being a, you know, the Lord of the Rings show that is just full of dwarves and elves, just dwarfing and elfing it up all over the place.
Right.
And you would not mistake 5 minutes of this for that at any point.
It feels like a very specific creative choice. I noticed that in the stat blocks that they posted for all the characters, they're all simply listed as humanoids. I wonder if there was a creative choice of like, we'll make some nods with the tiefling horns and with the sort of the half elf implication, we'll make some nods to the races in D&D, but we're not gonna say, like in Tolkien, you know, we're not gonna say there are all these different races of people and they're very different and we're gonna have to make them up differently or use effects to be differently. Plus, as we have discussed over the course of playing D&D for a while, implicit in a lot of the D&D racial typing is racism.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, so, and they have been, you know, that is a thing that they have been trying to move away from in recent designs in a way that I guess you could say is represented in this movie, where it's like, yeah, there are lots of dwarven miners, but there's lots of that being people who work in mines. But also, your dwarven character doesn't have to know anything about mines if you don't want to, right? They can be a wizard, a cleric, a ranger, a bard. They can do whatever they want.
Something I really especially appreciate about them not going real hard on front and centering a dwarven character, in the way that we had in the Lord of the Rings movies, is that I feel like, as Peter Dinklage has had to say over and over and over, how long is it going to take us to do better about this? Mm-hmm. Dwarfs deserve better representation than, hey, we're going to just dress them up and do the Tolkien thing again. If it was in the interest of not being confused by the confusing to the casual viewer as to whether this was part of Rings of Power or Lord of the Rings stuff in general, or it was, you know what, let's launch this and then let's do that right or better or figure out a better way to do it. I would hope that that is something that they look to in doing a follow up is further pushing things ahead in ways that I know some D&D fans are not happy about, but people with a more progressive mindset have been forcefully pushing for better representation of things that in their origins, like just because that's how it started, just how that is how it was conceived blah, 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 decades ago, doesn't mean that that's the way that it needs to continue to be going forward.
And it is, you know, with the Rings of Power, you know, that is a show that's basically like, let us spend hours talking about dwarven and elven culture. It's a little bit trickier if it's like, well, we want a character that's a dwarf or an elf. How do we not make them just a shortcut, you know, caricature stereotype? That is a harder thing in a movie. It's also, you know, I mean, I feel like this is, you know, this has that Marvel MCU PG-13. We want to make as much money. Every character is going to be, visually charismatic and pretty people. Elves can be very pretty. It's a little harder with dwarves.
I also think it's cheaper not to have a dwarf on camera all the time.
Yeah.
That I think helps. And just to, I wouldn't read too much into the stat block listing them as humanoids, because to get super technical about D&D, but why wouldn't I? Those are not actually character sheets,
yeah,
right? They're monster, they're stat blocks.
Sure.
And a humanoid is a type of, so every humanoid thing has the humanoid type.
I just feel like you could say, maybe that's why they did it that way, but like, you know, everything's a light touch because they're all just actors with makeup, essentially. Even Michelle Rodriguez, you could argue she's a, you know, maybe she's a half giant or something, right? But she's not. She's just a big, strong lady.
She's just a barbarian. Yeah.
And we're just going to leave it there. And I think that, yeah, I mean, this is the, it's a bigger kind of meta D&D issue. But the idea is, you know, D&D with the many races, the advantage of that is you can show a world where there is great diversity, and the races in the D&D world are showing that there are different cultures and they come together and all of that. The issues are when you try to map the races to human cultures and say these people are different, and when you try to say certain races can only do certain things or be certain ways or have very specific traits that boost them or drop them, that's when you start to look at it and go, that's maybe not the best best movie. I think this movie is just like, we're going to imply some of it, but we're not going to go too far because it is cheaper to just put makeup on actors and have them all be pretty and charismatic and just tinted a little bit toward a D&D.
Because even, you know, a tiefling druid is not a common thing that you would come across in D&D. And, you know, in D&D books that would have been written, you know, in very recent time, probably, I think the 4E handbook has, you know, the character player's handbook has a thing that's like, you know, tieflings are descended from devils. And as such, tieflings are usually, warlocks and sorcerers. And it's like, we all have to be warlocks and sorcerers. What if I want to live in the woods and be a druid? It's like, no, gotta be that.
That's not how it works.
Well, and even, you know, I guess that's an interesting thing then too, with who they decide is going to be your big bad in this movie, right? Where we have it, these people, the Red Wizard of Thay, Wizards of Thay, who are, as far as I can tell, spooky humans.
Yes.
not a, you know, a race of fantasy creatures that are evil, but humans that have made some bad deals with some dark forces and wish to turn everyone into zombies. Because, yeah, that would also probably not work great if, you know, the only people of non-human representation in the movie were your villains. Yeah.
You are not going to be surprised to know that also those stat blocks indicate that all of our heroes are chaotic good.
Yeah, checks out.
Did you see the movie? Yeah, it's pretty accurate. And that everybody else is a sort of evil. Hugh Grant is neutral evil, of course, as you might expect. And the paladin, as you might expect, lawful good. Of course he is. Yep. So annoying. Oh, so annoying. Actually, what I was going to say earlier when Scott was talking about how it's good that this movie has a little bit of a light touch and it's not everything is serious in the end of the world, is I was going to contrast that with Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, for example, or Game of Thrones. Like, there's a place for, it's very serious fantasy. Mm-hmm. But, like, I love that there's a place for something that doesn't take it so seriously, that obviously cares a lot. And I think this isn't the influence of the Marvel movies, where it's the same thing. Like, the Marvel movies, yes, there are stakes. Yes, there are emotions. But also, we're here to have fun. We care about this, yeah. But also we want to have a good time. And that vibe comes through with this, that if you contrast this to some of the other most popular fantasy stuff of the last couple of decades, it could be so serious and not, and, you know, they're
too serious.
Even when there are jokes, the jokes are more like, oh, a bit of whimsy, and then the swords are back, right? Like, and this is not like that. This is just, there's jokes. There's lots of jokes. It's, well, while there's action, it's great.
It's certainly not the primary reason this movie exists, but it is a 2-hour advertisement for the Dungeons and Dragons game as well, right? And
true.
So you want it to be fun, so that people who are watching it think, maybe I too can do this Dungeons and Dragons thing.
How can I give Hasbro more money?
Exactly. Hasbro's like, we have many ways you can give us your
so
money.
Many ways.
I started thinking of, you know, the Hugh Grant character who is somehow ruling a entire city that he then just is like ripping them off. And I started being like, where is Hugh Grant's monologue about heavy is the head that wears the crown? I actually just want to rip. I was like, oh, it's not that movie. He's not tormented by the bureaucracy. He's just a guy who steals stuff.
He's just a con man.
This was just the biggest con. That's all it was. He, you know, power is not so exciting. It's, you know, so many meetings. It's just fill my boat up with gold and let me sail into the sunset.
They can't get the temperature of the tea right, and he just wants to steal their money.
Look, Hugh Grant is now canonically +5 charisma. So it's true. It's true. He in fact, when he's not wearing armor, his charm is just so disarming. It's hard to hit him. I love it. It's yes, accurate entirely. That's what it is. Like, oh, that guy. Oh, but he's no, he's bad. Don't listen to him. He's trying to steal your daughter away. Yes, in this, again, the stakes of the movie, he steals Chris Pine's daughter because he's a bad man. He's a very bad man.
Well, he wants to give her a better life than Chris Pine can give her. So,
well, I
it's
mean,
really
I see
altruistic,
it.
Jason.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he hasn't figured out an angle yet to how he's going to use her in one of his schemes, but he will. He will. Well. This is, you know, I wanted to mention before we go, my favorite reference in the entire thing
that you
know. I think it's my favorite one that
and
we've
the moment I
previously.
Saw it, I was like, you know, again, it was it's that meme of the pointing at the screen is the characters from the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon from the 80s, which I watched. They're in this. You know, at the time, in that context, it was like a continuing story, and it was one of the better cartoons that were on in that era. Trust me, it was bad. It was dark times, Tony. Anyway, those characters are in the movie. They are among the other groups that are in the various tests in the arena and all of that. And they, you know, it's very clear because it's a kid with a pointy hat and a guy with
yellow
with,
and red. That you,
you know,
see
it's
the
you
field.
can see like they have their little outfit, but it is such a great dumb tip of the cap. It doesn't matter unless you know it, right? It does not get in the way, but I loved it so much seeing that, because I really did love that show when I was, whatever, 14, 13. So it was great to see that reference made as well. I'm not sure there was a reference to the earlier Dungeons and Dragons movie, unfortunately. Nobody, probably. No monsters wearing, you know, blue lipstick or something. It's too bad. Was that yours, Moises?
Yeah, that was absolutely.
Yeah.
It's exactly the right kind of fan service. You know, you could do fan service in the way that, you know, requires you to have memorized the monster manual and know this, that, and the other thing. But this is something that rewards fans of, you know, when there was no Star Wars after the original trilogy in like real canon form after Return of the Jedi. And until, I don't know, I guess the attempt that was Shadows of the Empire during the dark years, where, yeah, there were novels, but they were the expanded universe. They weren't necessarily definitely what Lucas was going to continue on with in a similar drought of anything other than the game itself. The thing that D&D fans had was that cartoon, which, hate it, love it, or survive it, that's what you had. And so for people who really watched the crap out of that cartoon, whether they loved it or not, that was what they had. And that kind of little tipping of the hat to folks who struggled through the less big budget, less mass market version of something, I just think that's cool. I think it's a nice acknowledgement of fans.
If you were a kid in 1984, I'm just saying, that was pretty good. Don't watch it now. I'm sure it's terrible. It had like half the cast of, what was it? Adam Rich was in it. Willie Ames was in it. Donnie Most was in it. I mean, okay, I don't know. But it was, look, it was 1984. There was nothing on. There was literally nothing on TV. That's what we had to watch. And we watched it.
Reruns of The Greatest American Hero.
I have no nostalgia for the D&D cartoon whatsoever.
Same. Yeah, I absolutely do, but I have not seen it since, nor do I ever want to.
So where do we think they go from this movie? Like, are they going to try and make this a franchise? What would a good franchise look like? How are they going to run this into the ground?
They've got to keep going with these characters. I mean, why spend all this effort to set them up and not continue along with them? Why jump to another party?
I can tell you why, because that would be the very D&D thing to do, would be to do another story with different characters in, you know, and only loosely in the same fantasy setting, right? That to me would be the different D&D experiences. Like, let's do one of these every 3 years with whatever 5 A-list celebrities we can get, and they have to do some stuff, and they go on an adventure, and then we'll do it again. And if we do 6 of them, the 6th one will be Dark Sun.
Then they would use all the same actors from this, playing completely different characters.
That
in a totally
I would also
setting.
Watch. So, yeah, I mean, it feels like the obvious thing to do if it's a franchise is like, we stick with these characters. But to me, the mistake is like, no, D&D is about, let's go to a new group of people and see what they do and see how they bounce off each other. But I guess that doesn't fit the formula.
It sounds to me like their plan is to potentially do a film sequel that would potentially have some of these actors in it. My guess there will be down to how expensive the actors are.
Yes. No Chris Pine, I would imagine.
And then, and then they're also planning, although again, writer strike, who knows what will actually happen, a streaming TV series that is not really connected to the film. So Hasbro,
it's a big franchise.
There's a lot of room. There's a lot of room there. But yeah, my thought when this subject came up was, yes, we will put a script into development involving all the characters in here, and we'll continue developing it until it becomes clear that that's more money than we're willing to spend, at which point it'll be new characters, because the star is Dungeons and Dragons.
So this movie was originally slated for release in 2021, and they had a great opportunity to work and rework it and rework it and rework it until they could actually start shooting it. And it's been done for a while. And based on the way they were talking at the world premiere, it would have taken the movie flopping to an incredible degree for them to not make a follow-up. And it sure sounds like they've already got ideas of where they go in a second one and a third one.
Yeah. And the movie did pretty well. So
yeah.
And Hasbro.
They have a streaming Paramount has a streaming service they need to put stuff in. So.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Also true, yeah. Right? So, you know, I mean, money.
It stayed in theaters like 8 Shazam 2s.
Mm.
The atomic unit for how long something stays. Yeah, yep.
That's Shazam 2.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, nothing lower
yeah,
than that.
It's, yeah, I mean, it would be many, many Liz Trusses, but yes, but yeah, just indeed. Like 8 Shazam 2s.
8 Shazam 2s. All right, well, if you've listened this far and you haven't seen the movie, it's fun. You should see it. It's on Paramount Plus as we record this in the U.S. I'm sure it's available wherever movies are distributed via rental or purchase or streaming.
It's available in your local comic shop. Where you
yeah, that's right. And that's one to grow on. All right. This is the end of the adventure. But we'll return again with these characters in a different format. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Jason doesn't know how to end an adventure. He's now been a dungeon master.
This is the end of the episode. I've enjoyed talking about this with my panelists. Will there be another Dungeons & Dragons movie? Tony Sindelar.
It remains to be seen. Thanks for having me. Goodbye, nerds.
Is there a Chris who is better than Chris Pine? I don't think so. Scott McNulty, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I hope the sequel is Dungeons & Dragons, The Adventures of Jarnathan.
Why will Hasbro keep taking all of our money? Moises Chuyon, thanks for being here.
Because people like me who don't understand the reference that was just made will spend all of their money to understand the reference.
For answers to questions such as these... visit your local library, or listen to Total Party Kill, or just come back next week for another episode of The Incomparable. Goodbye, everybody!